Patterns are at the heart of mathematics. In fact, mathematics has sometimes been called a science of patterns.
If you're looking at your whole system, your whole being is looking at a network of relationships across the whole landscape, with you being a part of it, then pattern recognition is one of the most fundamental things that you do.
That's Professor Chris Matthews, chairperson for the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Mathematics Alliance.
One of the things that I've learnt over the years is that pattern recognition and understanding patterns of the world is one of the foundations for Aboriginal knowledge systems as well, which makes sense.
Chris is also Associate Dean for Indigenous Leadership and Engagement with the Faculty of Science at the University of Technology, Sydney. When it comes to mathematics and Indigenous students, the pattern he sees isn't a good one.
Because the continual thing that we get from the education system is that you must be like us to succeed. That's the message we get. You can't be an Aboriginal person and succeed. You've got to be like us.
Chris says there are strong connections between mathematics and Aboriginal culture, and that these connections can be used to transform how Aboriginal students learn maths.
I want Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander kids to see themselves as intelligent kids. Their culture is relevant for the day, and there's all these connections to mathematics that has been denied.
And even more, Chris believes these connections and this education can create a pattern for success for all teachers and students when it comes to teaching and learning maths. Professor Chris Matthews is our guest for this episode of The Random Sample. Welcome to The Random Sample, a podcast by the Australian Research Council's Centre of Excellence for Mathematical and Statistical Frontiers. I'm Emily Duane. In this show, we share stories about mathematics, statistics, and the people involved. You can learn more about what the Centre does by visiting our website, acems.org.au. That's acems.org.au. Our host is Louise Ryan, a Distinguished Professor of Statistics at the University of Technology, Sydney, and a Chief Investigator for ACEMS.
Chris, thank you very much for joining us today. Really appreciate you taking the time to come and talk about your work.
Yeah, thank you very much.
First of all, I'm really interested to hear a little bit more about you growing up and what was it like, and were you always interested in mathematics?
I think the story I usually tell is I was really interested in the idea of science through science fiction. I was always a big Star Trek, Star Wars fan. I mean, I was born in 1970. So I was a child when the first Star Wars movie came to the drive-in, when we had drive-ins, you know, and I think those sort of imagery sort of changes the way you see the world in a lot of ways. Even though it is fiction, it sort of drives this other part of you, I think. You know, also with that is that computers started to become a thing within the household in the early 80s and so forth, with those early computers like Tandy were doing, and also the VZ200 sort of come out as well. And also the Commodore 64 was the one that people probably know more about. But those sort of things started to creep into the household. So I focused a lot of my energy in learning how to program and to do stuff on computers. And I actually come across the sort of connection between programming and doing numerical analysis for you know, different equations that are hard to solve, you know. So that was through my schooling. There was a course through my schooling in Queensland where we could do that sort of mathematics. So I got interested in this intersection. So I really wanted to work in that space. And I didn't even have the language to describe that. Even when I was trying to look at university, in the end, we know that now as computer modelling or something like that, or even numerical analysis, and all those sort of words was not in my vocabulary, but I knew I wanted to be in that space. But the reason I was like that, though, which was the difficult thing for me growing up, was that through my schooling, I did experience a lot of racism from my teachers as well as students. So the computer world and the science fiction world gave me a safe space. So a space where I could be myself in a sense, in one way. I can ignore everything around me, you know. And I do think to this day that I had that space, because a lot of Aboriginal kids who experience that within their schooling or in just in general, we're now looking at Black Lives Matters and the criminalisation of a lot of our people and all that sort of stuff. You know, there's a lot of stuff that happens to our kids that is just wrong. Yeah. You actually sit on that knife's edge to, you know, how you're going to see your future. Yeah. You know, and I'm lucky I had that space to sit in to actually see some type of future. This is where I got that interest in mathematics, science in general, and computing more so as well.
When did you realise, you know, after you've done your PhD in applied maths, when did you realise that you wanted to spend much of your career thinking about how maths is taught from an Indigenous perspective? When did you make that transition to think about pursuing those ideas for your career?
I might be telling a little bit of a long story here, but I'm going to do it anyway because I think it's important to tell. Because when I started in the academy, like to finish my PhD, I started to try and get a position within universities, which is always a hard slog, as any person who finished PhD knows. But the thing that was really difficult for me was that the community of people around me, it felt as though from different episodes that they didn't really, they couldn't reconcile me as being an Aboriginal person within the space of a professional mathematician of some form. And that come across in a whole range of different ways, which I don't think I need to delve into. But, you know, and also the other thing with that, like the community wasn't very accepting, but also what we were doing in mathematics rubbed against my values as well, rubbed up against my values. So what I did with my PhD is we were actually looking at a lot of soil physics problems, like modelling water flow through soils. But a lot of that stuff they were doing to engineer, like for example, we're looking at engineering ways of protecting waste from the environment, which sounds like a good thing. And when I started that process, I thought, oh, this is a good way to protect country and all that sort of stuff. But what became more and more apparent is that it becomes a justification to exploit country. It also they were using traditional people's lands to bury waste and put it there because of the geological structure of the places they were putting it. But they weren't doing it with the people. They were just taking land again from Aboriginal people from in different parts of the world and putting waste or whatever into these things. So I was in this community that didn't respect or value Aboriginal people or any Indigenous people in the world, and just was steamrolling with this science technology stuff. And we were using our maths to justify this, you know. And there was a turning point for me where I asked my supervisors, this is when I was doing my PhD, you know, if I actually created the best way to protect groundwater systems and so forth from this waste, I said, wouldn't this be a justification for more exploitation? And their response to me is that we are mathematicians. We don't worry about that. That's what the social scientists worry about. And I always thought that's a big cop-out. That's such a cop-out for us as a community of mathematicians and statisticians that that's the way we're going to view things. So this is when I started, this is not for me. You know, I love to do the mathematics. I love to do the mathematical modelling. But this community is not for me. The work is not for me, and I needed to do something to change this.
You didn't leave the community, though. You've managed to find a platform where you can actually make a difference. So coming back to your role now at UTS, where you're the Associate Dean for Indigenous Leadership and Engagement in the Science Faculty, and you're also involved in this Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Mathematics Alliance. So you've got some powerful platforms here where you can start to make some of those changes that you were talking about. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
I suppose just to go back, when I say the community is not for me, I was actually looking at the community in terms of the actual maths community within Australia at that point in time. Things are shifting at this point in time as well. But also what I did and why this platform exists is I needed to make a change is what I was trying to get to. So one of the things that I really wanted to do was make a change within education, because a lot of the statistics says that Aboriginal kids are 2 years behind. They still does, says they're 2 years behind their non-Indigenous counterpart and so forth, which is not a true reflection of our kids, because they are very smart kids, very, very smart kids. And for me, it was actually a systemic problem. There's something problem within the system. There's a problem with the way we teach people, you know. Even with my own story, I really had to turn my back on who I was, an Aboriginal person, and hide somewhere to succeed. And I didn't want this to happen for Aboriginal kids. I wanted to see themselves as I want Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander kids to see themselves as intelligent kids who have a valid position, they're relevant for today, their culture's relevant for the day, and there's all these connections to mathematics that has been denied. Because the continual thing that we get from the education system is that you must be like us to succeed. That's the message we get. You can't be an Aboriginal person and succeed. You got to be like us. So you got to go and, you know, get your qualifications, get your career, get your house, and do all those things so that you can succeed in a society. And there's, you know, and you can go on about it, all these different ways that is said to us as Aboriginal people. Yeah. So ATSIMA has risen as a national body to really look at improving, you know, or transforming mathematics education for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander students. They will actually value culture and value who they are, value their language and value everything about their aspect of their life to actually teach mathematics. And that's the goal that we have for ourselves. It's a huge job because it's across Australia. We're a very small organisation. There's only one paid employee at this point in time. You know, I make a bit of money from contracts that we do. And hence me taking up a position in the institution again, which is at UTS. But even with that, I really wanted to start to get back into it. I swore when I left my last institution I'd never go back again. But I decided to do that because we need more Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to come through those science programs. We need them. We need that not just for us, but also for the science community. For me, if you even look at the bushfire situation, you know, and you even look at the language around that mega fires that we had not long ago, they're still looking to science, you know, to actually solve the problem. When science knowledge has been implemented on this country, has caused the problem, you know. So they're not even, and they do have a little nod to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander traditions around bushfires, you know. But even if you look at it from a scientific point of view, why would you ignore 40,000 years of knowledge? Why would you ignore that and not take that seriously when you're actually trying to manage, you know, what we call Australia now? You know, why would you ignore that?
Yeah. What you're saying really makes sense. So you have a vision really for seeing things on a more equal footing, that young Indigenous scholars can become mathematicians and work in the field of mathematics without having to move away from their whole Indigenous culture and their perspectives on life and on Australia. That really makes sense. Maybe just to follow up on that, can you tell us a bit more about what are some of the myths and misconceptions that non-Indigenous people have about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people when it comes to mathematics and scholarship?
Yeah, well, I mean, it really comes down to that way that Australia was colonised. It was colonised on the doctrine of terra nullius, which basically means land belonging to nobody. So the whole doctrine says that we did not exist as a people. And in 1901, in the Constitution, they actually placed Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people within the Fauna and Flora Act. You know, so we were just considered part of the landscape. We weren't considered a people at all. So when you actually deny that recognition of a people, you're denying every aspect of them. You know, their knowledges, their languages, everything about them. they might as well be the cow that's sitting in the field, you know. From there, and that hasn't changed much. You know, that hasn't changed much at all. I mean, it wasn't very long ago that John Howard said that there is no relevance for Aboriginal languages today, and he was stopping bilingual education programs in Australia. You know, so Australia has still got to learn to value Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and culture. You know, and they have to make that leap. If they don't actually make that leap and actually say this is something that we need to know about, then things aren't going to change, whether it's maths or anything else. But having said that, within the realm of mathematics, you can't sort of put the same lens that you might see mathematics being now in our educational sense and say, and go look for it in Aboriginal culture, and that's what anthropologists have actually tried to do, which has sort of failed. They don't really believe it existed, so they don't really look very hard to understand the languages. So basically, because if they didn't believe it existed, then it didn't exist, really. But the best example with me, I've actually gone through a Western education system. So a lot of the things that I had to do was to re-educate myself back within who we are as Aboriginal people on this country. And that's part of the process of colonisation. Like, people prefer to see me as lost culture, you know, which I really hate that word, lost culture, because you're sort of almost saying to us, we've succeeded in our project to actually colonise you and you're no longer an Aboriginal person, you know. I never use those words, and a lot of people use this idea of, you know, languages are sleeping and things like that, and we need to revive them. And I totally agree with that sort of way of seeing it as well. That we are in a process of bringing of dealing with the colonization processes, and bringing back our culture, language, and the way we want to educate our kids. You know, that's the things that we're sort of heading towards, I think.
So just to follow up on that a little bit more, I'm struggling to try to get a more concrete image in my mind of what it would mean to, say, teach, to change the way we teach the traditional maths curriculum, but to do it differently from the Aboriginal perspective. Can you help me to get a little bit more concrete about what might you do to change the way that education is delivered? I understand the broad concept. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to get it more concrete in my mind as you describe it.
Yep. Well, the first thing we have to look at is how does Aboriginal people see the world and interact with the world? Yeah. Because for me, mathematics is part of that whole bigger thing. It's about knowledge production around understanding the world around us. Yeah. So one of the things that is really fundamentally important for non-Indigenous people to understand, as far as I'm concerned, is the kingship systems that Aboriginal people had on this country. And the reason why it's fundamentally important is because the kingship systems aren't just about people. Aboriginal people's philosophy is that we are all interconnected in this complex system. Yeah? So for real knowledge to exist from an Aboriginal perspective, it must come from that place. So you might hear people say that all knowledge comes from country. And that reason they say that is because the country that they're referring to is this interconnected system. So Aboriginal kingship systems are actually build a personal relationship for every individual into this complex system, where you're connected to every other person and every other part of life. You know, whether it's wind, water, animals, plants, you're all interconnected. So your responsibility then is to actually understand as how you maintain and make those connections healthy, you know, and that drives your law and all that sort of stuff. So, yep, so we can ask, Louise.
Well, I was going to say, when you gave your presentation, your lecture a few weeks ago, you had some really beautiful graphics that were depicting some of these kinships that the kids had drawn. And I can certainly imagine you could bring out some ideas of graphical models, network theory, and so on. So is that the kind of thing that you could sort of embed some of the traditional values in the way that you say, talking about some of these ways of drawing graphs, understanding those kinds of visual tools Would that be an example?
Yeah, that's one example. I mean, but it's, you know, more important example is you got to say to yourself, how do I value that knowledge now? You don't just overlay maybe a minimum path thing out through a, if it doesn't make sense to do it, why would you do it? You know, so you don't just do these overlays that people like to do. But you got to continue this valuing of what that means. So in the education of their children, whether it's non-Indigenous or Indigenous people, you're actually, you know, clearly demonstrating why these systems exist and what the value of those systems are. And then from there, you can actually draw out quite interesting things. Like, for example, and I keep on saying this, I hope someone might pull me up one day, but we're the only people that actually put ourselves on a circle. Like our idea of time and place is all about circles. So we up when you go up genealogically, there's actually a circular pattern. And one way of really understanding that is if you go from you to your mother to your grandmother, then your great-grandmother actually becomes your child. And then your great-great-grandmother becomes your sister, you know, and so forth. So it's a circular pattern like that. But then you ask yourself, well, why would people bother doing that? You know, and this is one of the things I've actually run with kids. Why would you bother making it so difficult that we put ourselves on circles and have all these different relationships? So what's so important about this circle? You know, and then from that, you can actually see how a lot of mathematics is based on, you know, when you're actually modeling the world around us, circle representations are everywhere. You know, because that's a key aspect of our lived experience, is everything is in cycles. So Aboriginal people knew this, and they had this in their knowledge system for a very, very long time. Even if you look at some of the astronomy stuff that Ray Norris actually put forward, he actually showed that, you know, Aboriginal people knew the connection between moon and tides before Galileo did, you know. So all that sort of stuff. Because we our knowledge is all about that. And then if you think of the fact that we understood cycles and understood other things, and things like boomerangs and rotation sort of start fitting in, you know. So the aerodynamics of the boomerang is an amazing thing, you know, but we sort of trivialise it, you know, as a stick, you know, as this, you know, that came back, you know, whoopee-doo, you know. It wasn't the wheel or something, you know. But we still go through this process, we're trivialised. But if you really think about the, you know, that we actually had the aerofoil here in Australia when Cook come. You know, if they actually come here and actually said, as a partnership, which is what actually Bennelong tried to do, is what I understand the history, as a partnership, you know, Australia could have been the country that had flight before anybody else, you know.
Yeah, amazing, you know. Amazing.
You know.
It's interesting, Chris, because I've often felt that mathematics, we're trained, that the traditional way of training is that you abstract things. You know, you have a system that maybe you're interested to model, but you're trained to almost forget the details and come up with an abstraction, look at the properties of that abstraction. And then oftentimes we forget to kind of take what we've learned and take it back to that originating motivation. And I think, I guess I'm trying to abstract now what you're saying. I just think it's part of the training that we're good at abstracting. We're less good at translating what we've learned back to the real world. And it's that translation. I feel personally that mathematics education in general needs to do a much better job of translating the elegant mathematics, statistical applied maths theory and methods back to real world settings. And I guess I could see that the kinds of things that you're talking about really powerful and important for teaching Indigenous kids about mathematics or developing ways to bring that traditional culture, Indigenous culture, into mathematics training. But it could actually influence the more mainstream mathematics education as well, as you say, in a partnership sort of way. I think that's important. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I love this word abstraction, because we sort of use this in English as a high level thing. But it's not, in some sense, because we all do abstractions. You know, even you said you're trying to abstract what I'm trying to say. I mean, that's what we do as people, you know. You know, because if we didn't abstract, then we wouldn't have language, because that language is an abstraction, you know. And so are many other representations, but we almost don't want to see them as being in the abstract. And as I'm thinking about this, when you're talking about that, what you just said then, is I was actually looking at kinship system that I presented through your program. So if anyone want to see it, they can actually look at it. You know, you can click on the link if you want to see more about that patterning of that. I was actually working with some mathematicians in Uni of Sydney, and I come to this point where we were just looking at the properties of it through group theory. And even that distinction, the fact that you've got to use quite high-level mathematics to look at the structures themselves tells you something, doesn't it? Yeah. So we're looking at group theory, looking at the structures of these, and they fit in abelian group and all that sort of lovely language. And then I said, well, if you relax the model more, and actually, because what we looked at was a very strict rule system, but in reality, there's a lot more relaxing of the rules, you know. So if we relax the rules a bit and actually had the second preference marriage thing put in, which does happen in reality, how does that, you know, affect the dynamics? I asked the mathematicians, you know, and they said, it's absolutely amazing. He said, because somehow they actually picked the group that maintains the integrity of the system, of, you know, that sort of thing. And I said, hang on, you know, it's just not by chance that they did that. You realise that, don't you? You know? And he said, but they did know group theory. And I said, yes, they did know group theory, but there are other ways of abstraction. There are other ways of seeing patterning. And one of the things that I've learnt over the years is that pattern recognition and understanding patterns of the world is one of the key foundations for Aboriginal knowledge systems as well, which makes sense. If you're looking at your whole system, your whole being is looking at a network of relationships across the whole landscape with you being a part of it, you know, then pattern recognition is one of the most fundamental things that you do. And that's why you see a lot of the beautiful artwork that you see. But, you know, 99% of Australians wouldn't even know what it means, because they don't have the understanding of the meaning of the abstractions that they see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so that visual aspect of bringing in the traditional views via that strong visual component, that's a big element of what you're talking about. And I think it would be a wonderful thing to do. I think you could get a lot of traction around that, bringing in that visual component. Mm. And it makes mathematics more vibrant, more alive and more appealing. Mm. So I'm interested, in your work with other teachers, you've talked about their reluctance or maybe even a fear sometimes to trying to teach into this space. And, you know, there is an obvious tension with what you're talking about in the more traditional ways of teaching mathematics. Can you talk a little bit more about that, of how you might sort of win over some of the more traditional mathematics teachers to think about some of these perspectives?
I think there's many aspects there that we have a problem with. I mean, we've taught mathematics in a way in this country since school started that hasn't changed. You know, I often called it was the biggest experiment in direct instruction, and it's failed. as it should, because a lot of the time it's about process driven stuff, it's about worksheets, and it drives students away. I mean, we have a problem with mathematics because we're not having the people doing it, because all they see it as is being a set of problems that you got to solve. And they get the right answer, then you're failing, and if you're failing, you're just confirming what I thought and what my family has experienced as well, because my father my mother wasn't very good at mathematics, you know. So I'm not going to be good at mathematics, and the only people who succeed are the ones who have this, you know, incredible innate ability to comprehend the incomprehensible, you know, that can move forward in this field. And if you do, then you become labelled as a nerd, then other people don't want to do it because of that, you know. So there's all these things that are happening in this space that is not encouraging people to engage with the matter, subject matter.
Yeah, and it's not bringing out the joy.
But the sad thing is that teachers are stuck in that. way of teaching and can't perceive of other ways of teaching. And then they got this curriculum passed down onto them where they see that the only way to get through it is to methodically teach each little bit, you know. So we do have, we're not training teachers to have the bigger vision of what mathematics is, you know, and how things are interconnected and interplay, you know, how you can actually teach a whole range of stuff within a few episodes rather than actually trying to do each little individual bit. And people even use that language of maths as these building blocks, and if you've got to slowly stack them up, you know, so if you don't get the bottom one, then you're gone. You know, your building's going to fall over or your wall's going to fall over. And that, to me, that's such a limited way of seeing any knowledge system, that it has to be built up slowly and surely from this little minute bits, you know, and it still occurs. So a lot of things I advocate is actually forget about all that. We're going to do it this way, you know. We're going to just look at what does a circle mean, you know, and we're going to brainstorm it, and we're going to understand how kids interact with it and what they understand about it, you know, and then build from there, you know. So the things that I do is build this idea of, you know, creativity as well, where you get students to actually draw and create for themselves and understand processes by drawing it themselves. And in my talk, I'll give an example of linear equations, I think, to actually show an example of that and what students can bring to that when they actually create for themselves. But that then opens up space where teachers have no experience with.
Yeah, because you know, what you're talking about, it sounds very exciting, but I could see from a teacher's perspective that it could be quite daunting. In many ways, it's easier just to kind of churn your way through the, you know, the established curriculum. Okay, today we do this, next week we do that. But what you're talking about, this much more holistic approach, creative approach, it would be quite hard to do it well, I would think.
But can I just say one thing? Teachers do embrace it, they actually make really good changes. And we've only, I'll give you an example of one teacher called Martine Turnbull in Renmark Primary School. She saw us do a way of teaching algebra through dance. So she said, and one of the kids who come and experienced that with us in Adelaide, they drove back to Renmark, which is a fair drive, about 3-hour drive. And on that drive back, he just said to her, I want to do more of this stuff in the classroom. So Martine, who's, you know, who was totally out of her comfort zone, was listening to this student, and to Martine's credit, is an excellent teacher. She will do what students feel like they need to learn. So she said she did it in any way that she could to actually start the process of teaching through dance. And her, you know, she just copied and kept kids, but they all had a good time trying to do it. But she stepped out of that zone, and she's actually starting to build a maths experience for these kids that they really, truly value. But unfortunately, that's sort of centered on her at the moment. She said that to me, look, all the kids want me to come to their maths class because they said that's the only way I can learn maths is with you. But the point I'm trying to say here is that she stepped out of the comfort zone and she saw the rewards for doing that.
So I guess the follow-up question would be, do you think there are ways that we can replicate and broaden that? So are there skills that teachers can learn, or are there... could there be workshops or ways to empower teachers to do this kind of teaching? And I guess a related question is, I noticed that you are a senior curriculum advisor for ACARA, which is the national body that helps guide the primary and secondary education in Australia. What does ACARA say about your ideas? Have you managed to get some traction there? Are they open to some ideas?
ACARA is more about curriculum, so they're not really... they don't really get into that pedagogy space.
So
in ACARA, we're just trying to put stuff actually in the curriculum, whereas we're valuing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people within the maths curriculum, so that teachers can look at that and say, oh, okay, there's an idea I can work with. Undoubtedly, what you have to do is work with that with their local Aboriginal communities as well to actually do that as well. And that's one thing that I should stress really strongly here. All the stuff I'm talking about only comes from working with Aboriginal people. Like even Martine has gone, you know, she already had strong relationships with her Aboriginal community, so she goes to them regularly, to the elders, and talks through ideas and brings that into the classroom as well. So that's fundamentally important for this, because one of the things that non-Indigenous teachers sort of talk about is how can I know this stuff? I can't know this stuff. And I said, yeah, you can't know this stuff. So you got to go and talk to people. you got to actually be out there and talk to people. But then because of the history of Taran Nullius, people are frightened to actually even approach an Aboriginal person still, to actually build a relationship with an Aboriginal person still. So it's all that stuff that stops this stuff. So in terms of your other question, we at NATSMA are working on that. We are starting to connect with a whole range of different schools because we're limited by our capacity at this point in time because we've actually just worked on the smell of the gnarly rag, as most non-profit organisations do, with not much support from government or anybody else at this point. We're starting to get support, actually, I should mention. BHP Billiton has helped us a bit, and Melbourne of University is starting to help us as well, which we really, really do appreciate. We're getting into a better space. But anyway, what I'm trying to say here is that we are connecting with many schools across Australia to start professional development programs with them. New South Wales Education Department, we're still looking at a possibility of working with schools across the western part of New South Wales. So we're starting to get some traction. As we actually do this, we'll start to put resources up on the ANSMA website as well to actually show what we are doing. And what I really want to do is put teachers' stories up there of them doing it. And that's more important than me saying you need to do it this way. Teacher experience in the classroom where they said, look, I've taken this idea and this is what I've done with it and this is what happened. And I want that sort of stories to be up there on the ANSMA website eventually.
I think it sounds amazing, and it's interesting, just even as we've had this little bit of a conversation and you've helped me to understand a little bit more detail some of the ideas that you're talking about, and I start to get excited and I think, wow, that just really sounds amazing, and you can start to grasp and envision what could be and how exciting it would be in so many different levels.
And we really do need it for our children, that's one thing, but also we need to build those relationships that have... I mean, we've all been set up in this dynamic of Taran Nullius where we're still sitting in separate camps. So we need to start building those relationships. And if we don't, then we're not going to get very far as an Australian nation. So
no, I think that's right. I think Australia needs this. And it could be transformative in so many ways. It would be amazing.
Yes.
So, Chris... if someone's interested to learn more about this or maybe even get involved, what would you recommend? What can people do?
Well, first of all, you can become a member of ATSMA. So you can actually go to our website, become a member. And by becoming a member, you get all of our news, all of our events and things like that. So you can keep in touch with what ATSMA is doing. And the other thing you can do is that there is a donate button on the ATSMA website. So if you feel inclined, we'd be more happy to take your money. So thank you.
All right, that's great. I'm really most grateful for your taking the time to talk with us today. And hopefully by doing this podcast, and we'll also put a link into the presentation you gave a few weeks ago, we'll get a few more people appreciating and understanding the really very exciting, innovative work that you're doing. It's really fantastic. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Louise. Thank you very much.
If you'd like more information about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Mathematics Alliance, head to the ASIMS webpage for this episode. You can find it at asims.org.au/podcast and click on episode 38. Also on our webpage, the video from the talk that Chris gave to ASIMS members earlier this year. Chris and Louise both referenced it during their interview. Thank you for listening to The Random Sample, a podcast brought to you by the Australian Research Council Centre of Excellence for Mathematical and Statistical Frontiers. If you like what you heard, please rate us on iTunes, because we think stories about maths and stats are worth sharing, and we want others to discover that as well. You can learn more about what we do at acems.org.au. That's acems.org.au. And you can find us on social media by searching at acemathstats. That's at acemathstats. We'll see you next week with another story from within ASIMS. Bye for now.